Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Hey, you know something? Home run hitters mean nothing.
Come on, fella, we're trying to watch.
As to the average long ball hitter compared to consistent clutch hitter with a good average, I'll take the latter every time.
Well, that's very nice of you, McNulty.
Well, it's a fact. It's an absolute fact.
Oh, boy, here we go again.
At no time has a home run hitter led the league in batting. At no time.
Yeah? Ted Williams won the batting championship and led the league in home runs in 1941, 42, and 47.
The exception to the rule. Think about that. The exception to the rule.
Hey, you know something? There's a 10-inch television set in my sister's apartment. Kind of, it dates back to 1948. She's got 5 kids. The apartment's a 6th-floor walk-up. And it's boiling hot. But I'll tell you, there's one thing that apartment don't have that makes it all worthwhile. It don't have McNulty.
For your generosity, I have something for you. It's a gift, a small remembrance of our friendship.
What is it?
It's a stopwatch, an old family heirloom.
What do you do with it? I mean, it doesn't keep time, it's just a stopwatch.
That is a fact. But it is yours. You may have it.
What'll I do with it? Stopwatch.
Well, someday you might own a racehorse, or you might want to run the mile, or launch an astronaut. Well, goodbye, old pal. Oh. E pluribus unum.
That's another thing, McNulty. You make me nervous. First you come in here, you bore people to death, and then you make me nervous.
I make you nervous.
You know something, McNulty?
You're the one guy that makes me wish they never repealed Prohibition.
Something tells me this is a very unusual watch.
And another thing, McNulty. McNulty?
I'm over here. Say something. Walk. Hey. Come on, everybody. Move.
If only I could turn back time. If only I had said what I still have. If only I could turn back time. I would stay for the night. If only I could turn back time. If only
open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everybody. So glad to see everyone here. Yes, we will be talking Twilight Zone. It is a beautiful day here in Pennsylvania. The sun is shining. It's about 70 degrees. Actually, I think it's a little over 70 degrees. Absolutely wonderful. My cat, Sebastian, which, of course, you've met Robert. My cat, Sebastian, is laying by the windowsill. He's just laying on the air conditioner by the windowsill, enjoying every minute of this beautiful sunny day.
Shoot, I would, too. If I was a cat and I could lie around.
Oh, yeah.
The
cat's life, you know. He's just sleeping his life away. I love it. Oh, gosh. So how is everyone today? We're here with Felix. Hey, Felix. And we're here with Dave. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Lynn. Hi.
And we're here with my buddy, Rick Wall. Rick, hey.
Hello, hello.
And we're here with guest number 7. And we're here with Louie. Hey, Louie.
Hi, Lynn.
And we're here with Bobby. Hi, Bobby.
Howdy.
Howdy. Okay, so it is just a wonderful day. And today we're going to be talking.
Well, you know what's nice for me is so far time hadn't stopped for me.
Thank you. Time hasn't stopped for you. That's right.
But it's not on my side neither, so what can I say?
Wait time for nobody.
Yep.
Time is on my side. Yes, it is. good old, what the hell's his name?
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, Mickey, yeah. Good old Mickey.
The Mouth, yep.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse, yep. Well, you know, today we're going to be talking about time stopping. And it's an episode called The Kind of a Stopwatch. And what I'm going to do right now is turn it over to my dear friend Robert for his opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Submitted for your approval, or at least your analysis, one Patrick Thomas McNulty, who at age 41 is the biggest bore on Earth. He holds a 10-year record for the most meaningless word spewed out during a coffee break. And it's very likely that, as of this moment, he would have gone through life in precisely this manner. A dull, argumentative big mouth who sets back the art of conversation 1,000 years. I say he very likely would have, except for something that will soon happen to him. Something that will considerably alter his existence and ours. Now, you think about that now, because this is the Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, Patrick McNulty, yeah. Well, I think that pretty much says it all. I mean, he's in his 40s, the biggest bore on the planet, holds a 10-year record for the most meaningless thing said. You know, and, of course, we all remember the one day he's asked to go into his boss. His boss wants to see him, and he is delighted. He thinks that his ideas have earned him some recognition. He deserves this, he thinks. And his boss points out that most of his ideas are crap, and the company's not involved in these ideas, and he fires him. So McNulty ends up going to a bar, and what happens at the bar, everybody leaves because he's so annoying, and he's talking over a sports game, and the owner tells him that this happens every day, and he wants him to go drink somewhere else because he's chasing all of his patrons out of the bar, chasing out all of his customers. But while he's there, there's a drunken man sitting at a table, and McNulty goes over, he buys the drunken man a drink, and just to thank McNulty for buying him a drink, he gives McNulty a stopwatch. And McNulty doesn't know what it's all about. He doesn't know anything about it, but it stops time. And so he plays with it a little bit, and he goes back to the office to show his former boss what it does. McNulty says, you know, if you can figure out how it works, that would be the biggest thing that the company ever did, and the boss doesn't even want to hear about it. So McNulty leaves the office and messes things up before he goes. But then he tries to demonstrate the power of the watch to the customers in the bar, but then he realizes that nobody is aware of the effects except for him. So he figures, well, if nobody knows, then I'm just going to go to a bank and I'm going to rob it, stop everybody in their tracks, rob the bank. He goes, he gets the money, he's walking out, drops the watch breaks, froze time permanently. Now he can't get it back. He runs off, he's trying to fix it, he wants to return time to its place, and he can't. He's begging people to talk and move, but it's too late. Too late to change things. Now everybody is stopped forever. He's the only one moving. Oh, well. Pretty tough break. And, you know, remember the season 2 episode, The Silence, in which a member of an exclusive club bets another chatty, obnoxious member $500,000 that he can't stay silent for 1 year? Remember that episode? Well, if someone had presented that same wager to McNulty, I think they surely would have won, because I don't think McNulty could have stayed silent for a half a year, not even, or a year, even a half a year, or even a month.
Yeah, but I don't think McNulty would have gone to the extreme that the guy did in that episode.
Oh, but yeah, I don't think he would have, you know, sliced his vocal.
No, he's not smart enough to think of something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
I mean, Serling describes him as the biggest bore on earth, and that was an appropriate description. You know, we've seen our share of losers and loudmouths in the series, but this guy's pretty bad. I mean, he's so full of himself. And he can't understand why his boss fired him, because he's so sick and tired of McNulty's meaningless and stupid suggestions. But, you know, we saw characters like Henry Bemis, Luther Dingle, Mr. Beavis. We saw them all. But they were all pleasant, likable guys. You know, you didn't hate them. You didn't hate them. McNulty is a horse's ass. You know, he's a complete jerk. The plot
of the episode. Called horse's asses.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to insult Mr. Ed. But the guy is really annoying. I mean, I loved Henry Bemis. And I, you know, Luther Dingle you had to like. And Mr. Beavis, you know, he was annoying, but you didn't hate him. But, you know, the plot of the episode, it was so simplistic. I mean, it was laughable. You got to admit, it was laughable. It's a weak story. It's not worthy of Rod Serling's writing talents, as many of, you know, these later episodes aren't, and obviously Serling was tired, and at this point he simply threw out stories in order to get through the series, no matter how lame they were.
Original story, somebody else did.
He didn't write this one, the original one for this?
He adapted it for TV.
Oh, okay. Well, even that, you know, he should have thrown it out, because, you know, it had potential, but it went nowhere. I didn't even get the point of it. How did the original owner come to possess the stopwatch? What exactly did someone gain from stopping time? It would be different if the owner could stop certain people or certain events, but if the whole world stops, what's the point? You know, suspension of disbelief is a big part of the series, but there has to be a reason to do it. And the whole episode just didn't make a lot of sense. When Henry Bemis broke his glasses at the end of Time Enough at Last, most of us wanted to cry with him. When McNulty broke the stopwatch, I think most of us just said, oh, well, you know, serves you right. You got what you deserve. You know, he's going to survive for a while. He had a lot of stuff around him. He had more around him than Henry did. But, and I'm sure he would have been able to find enough food for some time, but he wouldn't be able to cook for too long with nobody running the power plants. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, he could read from...
That brings up the situation with the Landoliers, the Stephen King movie.
Oh, remember.
Remember when they were in the cockpit and they were trying to figure out why the food tasted like straw and why there wasn't a fizz to the pop?
That's a good one to bring up. Yeah, I remember that.
So maybe the food there don't have no taste, or the pop don't have no fizz because of time being paused like that. So.
Yeah, that's a good one to bring up because that's a good analogy because, you know, I mean, really, he's got food for a while, but it's got no power. Nobody's going to run the power plants, you know, and he's going to be able to read for amusement until he decides to end his life just like Henry Bemis did. I mean, that would be his best course of action considering the circumstances, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Richard Erdman played McNulty. He's still alive. I think he's 88 or 89 years old, you know. He was in a lot of TV shows over the years. And Doris Singleton, she played the secretary. And she was in the I Love Lucy series. Some of you may remember her as Carolyn Appleby in I Love Lucy. But I don't know. The episode wasn't as bad as some others. You know, we got Cavendish coming, Mr. Beavis minding the matter. It wasn't good overall, but I'm not going to give it a zero because there are much worse episodes. So I'm going to give it a one, and I'm going to give it to Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, I didn't have a whole bunch to say when I reviewed this. I was not too crazy about it. I thought he was kind of annoying and a bore, to be honest about it. But like you, I gave it a one as well. It very much reminded me of The Mind and the Matter from season 3 when I was watching this episode. And, you know, I kind of wish I had a fast forward button to end this, to me. And excuse my language, annoying piece of crap is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if he didn't die from loneliness, he surely would have died from starvation. Because what we just talked about earlier about, you know, this situation, yeah, there's food and stuff like that. The way I get this, and maybe everybody in the here in the room could answer this, that do you believe that McNulty, even though he froze time outside of himself, that maybe time was still going on, but maybe that he was knocked into his own reality whereby it looked like to him everything was still, but the world was still going on around him? That's what I got that feeling about.
Yeah, because sometimes that seems strange. He could change it. The entire world stops because of one man. I had a hard time with that.
Well, I think I'm with you, Robert. I think the world did continue. He just got stuck in a particular moment in time for the rest of his life. Unless he could figure out how to fix the watch.
Yeah, I had a hard time. I had a hard time with thinking that he stopped the entire world.
Here's the question. Does he age while he's stuck in that time, or does he stay perpetually the same age?
Well, I
think that Mr. Trick there, because... what they could have done, and it was done in the original story of Star Trek, the better ending would have been right at the last scene with the barman and the people in the bar, them suddenly just coming to life, and one of them say to the other barman, "Can you hear a buzzing? Can you hear a buzzing?" If you remember the story where we've had in Star Trek where they've speeded up so that people think they've died and they've disappeared, but they're not. They're living on a very, very... In fact, that his time has speeded up, so he's living at 1,000 times faster. So, to them, he's not there. And then they would switch back to their time, and they say, "Is that, can I hear a buzzing in my ears?" Which, of course, would be him incessantly talking, but on a different time stream.
You know, that would only work if we assume that time is progressing and he's actually... going to be perpetually stuck in that.
Well, that's what I mean. There's a switch at the end, I meant.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is from his perspective, nothing is moving. So every moment is the same time. It can't be 5 seconds later in the future. He's still stuck at whatever time he's in. So he can't
It must be moving imperceptibly slow because he wouldn't be able to breathe. If he can't breathe, he can't speak.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is a question. I mean, that's the question. Is he really moving slow? My impression was that
time had just passed.
No, he's moving fast. Sorry, I meant he's moving, you know, thousands of times faster.
Yeah.
So to him, everybody seems stopped. He's not moving slow. He's moving super fast.
I know, I know. I know what you're saying. I understand the concept. I'm just saying we'd have to believe that that's what's happening. In other words, we'd have to see him later in the future where things have actually moved because he knows that time is moving. My impression was always that time has actually just stopped. He's stuck in that time. If he ever does fix that watch, when he comes back out of time, he'll be back at the exact moment that he left.
Oh, right.
But
everybody
else
would
age around
him. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There was a Outer Limits where a guy went through the sound barrier and came back, and everything was moving much slower than him. And he thought time had stopped, and he's watching, I think it was a fire truck or a semi or something like that, going towards a little baby. And he jumps out and puts chocks in the front of the wheels eventually and stops the truck because he realizes that the truck's moving, even though he doesn't know that it's, you know, he sees it. At one point, getting closer to the kid, even though time's not moving to him, you know, so he realizes, oh, wait a minute, I got to stop the truck, and he does. And I forget what else happens. I think time eventually returns to normal.
There's a story like that where somebody's trying to stop an assassination. That's the Twilight Zone one, isn't it? Where they have a medicine man with a wagon and a horse, and he's trying to stop an assassination.
Oh, yeah.
Goes back
yeah,
in
we
time.
Did that one already. Yeah, we did that one.
Yeah.
That was No Time Like the Past.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this very much reminded me of a movie, and I don't know if you guys remember, it had Robert Hayes in it called The Girl, The Gold Watch, and Everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
TV movie. That was on. It's not shown very much, but...
You know what? It's available on YouTube. I actually looked it up, like, last week.
Oh, really?
You can find it, like, it's like an hour 40, because I guess they cut the commercials. I remember. I have to see it. This will be part of the reason why I actually kind of like this episode. Not that I really like it, but it just made me want to revisit all these old time stop concept shows and movies. What was the plot of The Girl, The Gold Watch, and Everything? I remember that he would click the stopwatch and then everything would turn a red hue and everyone would stop.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me years later of the one with Lauren Hutton. Remember that one? It was set in the Old West. Grant was president. It was time something or another where the guy that played on Knott's Landing, he was in the TV movie, and he played a scientist or something for the government. And,
Oh, 1 minute to midnight.
It's time there something or another. It had that one...
Were they working on an experimental machine?
What was it?
Time After Time?
No.
No, that's the one with Malcolm McDowell.
Anyway, it was a CBS movie, Time Stalkers or Time Something.
1201.
I don't remember. Well, anyway, the whole thing about it was Lauren Hutton played someone from the future who comes back. And she has this time thing, looks like a diamond or whatever, a crystal, and it has a time thing in it. And supposedly there was assassination on President Grant or something like that, and he goes back in time and stops the assassination or whatever. It had a bad guy in it that was from the movies, and I forget what his name was. Well, anyway, that's been an interesting one. I was thinking about that, and the girl the go watching it. That's an old one I hadn't seen for a while. But thanks to Dave, we were kind of on the same mind there. The episode you're thinking of, Dave, is Season 3, Episode 11, Wink of an Eye, is what you were thinking of.
Ah, thank you.
I do have the trailer for that, by the way. Like I said, all great minds think alike.
right at him, and he just wasn't there.
Captain.
Do you mind explaining? Who are you?
The enemy.
Captain Kirk! He's gone.
The spark, you don't know what that'll do to you.
He's gone. Well, quite delightful kissing you when you couldn't see me.
Hila!
But now...
Hila!
I'm sorry, sir. Entry's forbidden.
Yeah, that's what you were thinking of, Dave. Like you said,
thank you.
Same lines, no problem. The other one that I told Lynn I was going to bring up last time we were on, Friday 13th, the series, 13 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a clip for that. And I had to put the opening in because I loved the opening. Because Armstrong always opened, I think, the first or second season. You know, Andrew, you know, the Louis Bondadie made a deal with the devil. So here it is.
Louis Vendredi made a deal with the devil to sell cursed antiques, but he broke the pact, and it cost him his soul. Now his niece Mickey and her cousin Ryan have inherited the store, and with it, the curse. Now they must get everything back, and the real terror begins.
Wilkerson was a switcher at the Castle Hill station. He was fired for drinking on the job. Swore he'd get even with the subway system, of course.
Lewis's records show that Bart pawned the watch here.
Yes, shortly after he was fired. Then about a year later, he bought it back.
With a curse thrown in it, no extra charge. That also explains why the curse is centered around the Castle Hill station, too, hmm?
Yes. Boy, Lewis conveniently handed him a way to change his destiny, didn't he?
The ability to stop time and have everything you want for 1 hour.
Yes, must have been waiting for him. Well, Bart died a couple of months ago, so son Henry must have inherited the watch, along with almost unlimited wealth.
I think he inherited a little bit more than he bargained for.
Yeah, like a gold-digging wife. Like that grave-digging.
The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones.
Shakespeare.
In that one, he was always quoting lines from Aristotle and stuff like that. That was the running gag or theme for the episode. But, yeah, I like 13 o'clock. And it's neat because when you used the clock and you froze, time froze, everything was in black and white. But you yourself stayed in color. And you were able to go and do whatever it is during that hour, during that 13 o'clock. And then... But the whole thing is, you had, as he said, you had to be back at the train station in order to activate the watch after you you're supposed to do to activate it. But yeah, that was pretty good. Like I said before, I finish up here. I felt this very much came close to being a comedy. It was so on the edge on the way this was going, and that even made it worse, I think. So that's why I give it a 1 out of 5. For this story.
That's all I could give it, yeah.
Pass over to Bobby. Bobby?
Oh my, what a surprise. Just another crappy, instantly disposable and forgettable episode as the Twilight Zone crawls badly injured to the finish line. However, there is, it's late in the game for the series, but there is a valuable lesson to be learned here. And that is that in order to keep an audience tuned into a story and keep them interested, you have to give them a character to care about, to either hate or to love. In this case, we are given an overbearing, obnoxious, loudmouth moron. And from the start, we don't give a crap what happens to him. So why even bother to watch? I just want him to go away. I realize that the story is about a character who gets what he deserves, but I deserve something better in exchange for 22 minutes or so out of my life. In a few weeks, we'll be doing Living Doll, and that episode gives you a character to despise from the minute it starts. All you want him to do is to die, and there is a reason to stay involved. But I hate stories like this where there's just somebody so unbearable that I don't want to be anywhere around them. And I have to sit and watch this, and I think it's just completely obnoxious. As usual, I have nothing to say about this crap, but I did check the Internet Movie Database, like I always do, and where the people who voted, as usual, give it a 7.7 out of 10 rating. And a few comments people posted about it on their message board are worth repeating here because of how stupid they are. One person writes, "Aside from excellent writing, this episode excels because you can't help but wonder what you'd do if ever this impossible situation actually were to happen to you. Exciting and satisfying. Give this one a watch." Another person writes, "This episode would have fit well in the very first season. It's the usual Serling winning formula, though this is adapted from another writer. You wonder why the main character doesn't figure out the value of the gift much earlier. Still, it's a classic episode and one any real fan will enjoy. And after watching, you will start realizing how often you've seen stories like this in other TV shows and movies that came after." Another one writes, "This episode recalls the ending of Time Enough at Last and takes it in a decidedly different direction." And the last person writes, "It's a kind of remake of Time Enough at Last, the one in which Burgess Meredith is the only man left alive and intends to devote his life to reading his books, except that he accidentally breaks his glasses." Well, here's what I have to say about that. The Twilight Zone is full of these stories. There are far too many of them in which people get their comeuppance at the end. That works for about a season and a half, and after that, it just becomes boring, and you know what's coming, and there's nothing interesting about it. I could sit here and spend an hour naming episodes that are just like this. These comments on their own, the IMDb message board, are ludicrous, of course, especially comparing it to Time Enough at Last. And that classic, we actually have a character we care about. Yeah, he's not someone you want to invite to a party, but... all he wants is to be left alone to read while his wife and boss verbally abuse him. The ending is tragic because he deserved better. In this, the character gets exactly what he deserves. And the non-surprise ending will be figured out by a five-year-old in the first act. I mean, honestly, what do you think is going to happen? Of course, he's going to be stuck with the world not moving. Surprise, surprise. So there's really no reason to follow through on it. You know where it's going. Even this late in the series, we're still watching stories about people who want something and then get it and live to regret it. Enough already. I think I've learned the lesson, thank you. I mean, over and over and over again. Some of those stories involving that kind of ending were good at the beginning, but now we're just recycling the same kind of thing over and over again. And there are no surprises. So this is a terrible story, of course. And... you know, it's pretty awful, but as Lynn said already, it is a beautiful day and it's spring, and I'm feeling pretty good, so I'll be generous and give it a zero. Lynn?
All right.
Hey, Bobby, I wanted to ask you, scene where they were doing the suggestion box things and about the hot dogs and all that crap, didn't that remind you of the Bard where he's trying to do the scripts? He's doing the same idea, but in different ways.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking
of. Yes, I've just gone through the residue of the suggestion box, covering the past three-month period. And here is one of your suggestions, dated March the 13th. Make hot dogs flat so that they can fit easily into a hamburger bun.
How about that? You think about that now.
Make tin cans square so that they can be stacked together more easily in garbage cans.
Isn't that a gas?
Put small pontoons in field packs of soldiers so that when they cross rivers, they can get across by themselves.
That one is worth $1 million just as it stands. You see, the soldiers go into the water and they got these cans on the back with air.
Cooper Corporation makes Ladies Foundation garments. It doesn't have anything to do with hamburgers, hot dogs, tin cans, or national defense. And not one of your 340 suggestions. I repeat, not one of them has anything remotely to do with this company's product.
Exactly why I want to talk to you, Mr. Cooper. The key to a successful modern business is diversification. You think about that now.
I have thought about it. You're fired.
Yeah, well, when you run out of ideas, you just keep recycling old things. And it's a pity, really. It really pains me to see the Twilight Zone come to this. I know we've got Living Doll to do yet, and that's great. And as Lynn has said often, if they had canceled the series at the end of the fourth season, we never would have seen it. I suppose that's true. But it's really painful to watch this kind of thing. A classic series should know when to end. I mean, I really admire series that know when to quit. I mean, Seinfeld went out on top. It was at the top of the ratings, and they ended it because they were out of ideas. And right now on cable TV, on AMC, the series Mad Men is starting its last season. It's also on top of the ratings over there. And they've just decided that enough is enough, so they're closing it down after like six seasons. So I think that, you know, at some point you just, whether you're making money or not and everybody loves it or not, you just got to look at it and say, you know what, we've done all we can do. Let's get out of here. And, you know, thankfully we've got one more to go. But the trouble with that is that after Living Doll, we're going to go on and do even worse ones. So
I still think there's a couple other good ones to come.
I wouldn't use the word good. I think they're watchable, and that's about it.
But
it would have been nice. It would have been nice to end with. Would have been nice to end with Living Doll. But I'll save those comments for a couple of weeks from now. Anyway, zero from me as usual, Lynn.
All right, Dave.
I thought those were all valid comments you read out. I don't particularly agree with them, but I think they were fair comments. I wouldn't rate it as highly as that, but those comments all did apply in some way or another. I don't mean the inference that it's as good as the Time Enough at Last story, but in terms of their idea, of course it was predictable and it was formulaic. I think that was the biggest weakness of it, was formulaic. But I think the clue was in the music at the beginning. When they start having that sort of what I call, you know, the humorous music. They're really giving you a clue that this is one of the light-hearted episodes. And each season we've had at least two stories like that. You know, we've had the ones with you know, the spinning the coin, the bloke who can't get it, looking at the coin stands on end, the bloke who thought he hated everybody, why could he live in a world with people more like him, and he gets a world where everybody looks like him. It was in that sort of vein. And I do think that the failing was the ending in a way. But I quite enjoyed the story. Again, you couldn't have done this as a longer episode. The 25 was stretching it to breaking point as it was. There were some nice character actors there. I'm sure I recognise the man who played Joe behind the bar. Was he in Phil Silvers or something like that? He was.
He was a big character actor. He's been in a lot of things.
Right.
He's been in a lot of TV series and stuff.
Yeah, I want to thank Robert for playing that clip, because yes, it was definitely the switcheroo to me would have been if they'd done it at the end. As I said, unfortunately, I didn't mean to speak over other people, but if they could have given the impression that nobody was moving, but they were perhaps moving, they were moving at normal time, but imperceptibly to him, then that would have worked, and we could have had a nice switcheroo at the end then, because we could have suddenly seen the world from their point of view, and he would be invisible and buzzing around. So we realise that, you know, 7 billion of us haven't had to pay the consequence of him dropping his watch, which is a bit tough. I don't think he would run out of food. Somebody said he would run out of food, but if indeed time was frozen for them, well, it's a perfect storage, isn't it? I mean, the food
Dave,
wouldn't go off.
7 billion of us now. Back then, it was only maybe about 4.5 billion.
That's probably a very good point indeed. Yeah, I think when I was at school, we were headed towards another ice age. But there you go. I mean, how things change. So, yeah, I quite... I quite enjoyed it. As soon as I heard that music, then I thought, I'm in for one of those type of stories. And it was going to be a sort of, you know, a comeuppance type of story, which is exactly what it turned out to be. Remind me, and again, why I said some of those comments were good. I didn't mean that I definitely endorsed those comments, but, I mean, it is true that many, many storylines have taken this sort of thread, as was done by when Robert played that thing from Star Trek. There was a TV series in the UK called The Infinite Worlds of H.G. Wells, and one of those that were sort of based on the short story, but the actor in that was playing the young H.G. Wells, and one was called, based on his story, called The New Accelerator, and that was an elixir that you drank, and it accelerated your speed. So again, nobody saw you, but you were moving at a super speed, and I had put the link in the room earlier. NC Visitor mentioned another story, and they're not on speech, so let me just wind back and just mention it. It was the miracle one, wasn't it? The Man Who Could Work Miracles, a smashing old film. But again, that was classed as a fantasy comedy. So look out for The Man Who Could Work Miracles. The other one that I was thinking about was that film, and it's actually called 1201, and that was something where they were doing this experimental machine, and that actually caused a sort of Groundhog Day type of thing, that every time the clock clicked over to the first minute after midnight, the whole day replayed, except these people who had been in the sphere of influence of this machine when it was switched on. And then they spent each of those same days trying to convince the scientists not to switch the machine on, to break the cycle. And also, and Robert, I can't remember whether it was an Angel episode or a Buffy episode, but there was one about a young student who it might have been Buffy. And he had a girlfriend, but he found out his girlfriend was going to leave him. And I'm going to talk about this delicately if I can. He overhears his girlfriend talking to a friend saying, you know, at the prom night he's going to propose to you. And she says, yeah, I don't know how to break his heart. I'll have to tell him. And then I can't think of what the expression was, but basically she was going to have one more date with him. I can't think of a delicate way of putting it, but she was going to sort of sleep with him one more time to sort of soften the blow. So this guy who's a physicist decides that this was going to be a perfect moment. So he does it where he wants to try and make time stop, but he does the calculation wrong, and it means the whole world is going to stop. I can't remember if it's Buffy or Angel has to then, you know, because they foresee that the world's going to end, and they don't know what it is, and it's this young lad doing this experiment with this expanding time bubble going out. So it has been used in lots of others, and there was another one. There was one about an explosion on a train where they were trying to solve where the bomb was planted, and they kept reliving this time with the chap. Lots of things.
Yeah,
so,
I seen that a couple of weeks ago. The one where, yeah, source code. That was good.
Source code. That was it. Source code. And at the end of that, he ended up timing kissing the girl, thinking he was going to. I mean, I won't say what the ending was, but he thought he was going. Everything was going to end at that point, so he made sure he was kissing her at that very moment because he thought he was going to be frozen in that perfect moment. So I'm not rating it highly. I'm not pushing this as a good story. I'm just saying that as soon as I heard the music at the beginning, I thought it was one of those stories, you know, like The Man Who Wanted Everybody to Be More Like Him. The only trouble is, of course, he didn't get his comeuppance in one sense, except there's nobody there to listen to them. Although I suppose with his his determination, he'd just carry on going to the bar every night and talk to them, whether they could hear him or not. So what can I give it, though? I suppose I would give it a 3, but because it's so formulaic and predictable, I will drop down to a 2. Reluctantly, I'll drop down to a 2. But if anybody gave it a 3, I wouldn't rile against that. And one very quick thing, if I may, just to say that watched a great film here in the UK a couple of nights ago. And the reason I'm going to mention it was it was based on a short story by Richard Matheson, who we mention a lot here. It was based on one of his short stories called Button Button. And the film had Cameron Diaz, and it was called The Box. I don't know whether anybody's seen it.
Oh, yeah, The Box.
I quite enjoyed it. I mean, it was strange, but I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was a remake.
Yeah.
Yeah, James Marsden and Frank Langella, who's always watchable, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, back to you. Sorry for going on for so long, but
fine. You know, I was just going to say something, you know, talking about music, when you first hear the music. My all-time favorite Twilight Zone episode has always been Time Off at Last. But think about the beginning music to that. The music in the very beginning of Time Off at Last is very, like, jumpy type music. Like, it's like you wouldn't think that it would be a serious episode, but it is. So sometimes you can't always judge by that, because the music in, before Time Enough at Last is very happy and, you know, jumpy type of music. And I don't know, you might have to go back and look at that and listen to that.
Lynn, I found what I was looking for. It was called Time Stalkers. It came out in 1987. It was a made-for-TV movie, and it had William Devine. Now, he played in Knott's Landing and some other shows as well.
Yeah.
He played a college professor, and he was also into guns in the Old West.
A gunslinger.
He was a good actor.
Yes, yeah.
Good actor, yeah.
That was an excellent film. I remember that.
Yeah, and Lauren Hutton was in it. John Ratzenberger, remember he played in Cheers? He played a general in it.
Ratzenberger.
Yeah,
John Ratzenberger, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, was he a lovable bar or not?
That's who I was trying to remember, the villain of the...
Yeah.
He was the villain?
Yeah. Yeah, Klaus Kinski. He played Joseph Cole. Yeah.
Cool.
So, right. Yep.
Okay, Rick. What does Daphne have to say about this episode?
she's not here and didn't see it, I don't think. Anywho. Dear Mr. Serling, can we have some more comedies written by that comic... I can't do it.
Yeah, that haven't been enough, have there?
What can I say that hasn't been said already? Yuck.
Yuck. Yeah, that hasn't been said. Yuck.
thank you.
You're welcome.
Don't like it at all.
Nope. Like I said, I agree with this. Just about everything that's been said. Although I can say that in the remake of Twilight Zone, there is a better time story called Paladin of the Lost Hour.
That's the 1980s one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's one of the 80s, yeah, because the 2000s remake was terrible. The 1980s had some actually had some decent ones in it.
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about?
Paladin of the Lost Hour.
Okay, because I'm thinking of another one called A Little Peace and Quiet.
Okay, I know that one too. They're both good episodes.
Yeah.
The 1980s had much better episodes than the 2000 remake. Yeah, and they're both reminiscent of this one.
Yep. Yes, I'll give it a 3. But there's a minus sign in front of it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay,
how dare anybody
Rick.
Rate something lower than me?
Okay, I got to play this. Just for you.
Oh, my God. Where's Mr. Horse? You said Mr. Horse in here.
Yeah, we got to. I'll give him a call and bring him back.
I don't like it. Don't like it at all.
We were going to bring him in for the Bard, but we just ran out of time. That was,
ah, yeah.
We had fun with that one, so.
So, Rick, you don't like this episode at all?
No.
No. And I'm sure Daphne wouldn't either.
Well, Bobby, you got to be impressed by that. He beat you.
Yeah, I know. I'm very depressed.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't worry, when we get to Come Wonder with me, Lynn's going to beat everybody.
And you're not going to believe this. There's another podcast I listen to that does them out of order, and it was one of their past ones they reviewed called Come Wonder with Me. So I have listened to the review, and it's going to be interesting.
And
I get that feeling.
And Felix gives it a 1.5. He says it's a stupid story. And our new listener, NC Visitor, I'm thinking maybe North Carolina you're from, but NC Visitor, and he says, after I've been jaded with years of science fiction, I would give it a 1. So, yeah, you're pretty much in the majority with us, NC. Yeah, hope to see you around here a lot more, too. We're here every 2 weeks.
And I assume that's name's based on Narnia Visitor, is it, from... Deep Space Nine. The screen name.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing.
Oh, maybe. It might be.
If they're science fiction fan, as they say.
He says, after I've been jaded with your science fiction, I would give it a 1, yeah. NC Visitor. Well, only he or she can tell us. Yes.
Mr. Visitor or Miss Visitor, the Daphne we were talking about is my dog. We also call her Hellhound. She's a somewhat regular visitor here on
and she's an
absolute
darling, and I love her to death. I have a picture of her, and she is the cutest thing going. And Louie, I want to hear from you now.
Okay. I think it's, you know what? The concept of the episode is, I think, a really good concept, a good science fiction concept, and just the fact that it's been used so many times since then kind of proves that point. I mean, you guys all mentioned a bunch of episodes. I remember there was a movie in the 2000s called Clock Stoppers. It followed basically the idea that Dave was telling us, that these are characters that are actually moving very fast in time, and time is moving very slow from their perception. You know, this episode isn't that good. The problem really is the character. McNulty's, he's kind of arrogant, and then he's not very smart either because he doesn't really know how to use this watch to the full benefit that he could. He only figures it out at the end, and then, of course, he breaks the watch. I remember watching the remake. I'm not going to say the remake of this episode, but this concept was used again when they redid The Twilight Zone in the 80s in that episode that I was mentioning called A Little Peace and Quiet, and it's a little comedic. I mean, it starred Melinda Dillon. She was the mom who was in Close Encounters, and she's the mom from A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that premise, basically she finds, I think, a pendant with, like, an hourglass on it or something. And basically she discovers its powers when, like, all the kids are yelling at the table, and she just has enough time. She goes, shut up, and then everything stops. And then she realizes how much, and then it becomes kind of a boon for her. She can get these kids to stop, be quiet. And then she uses this. Now, the thing is, this watch really works if you can use it at will. In other words, you can stop time when you need to stop it and then start it over when you're ready. So in other words, she gets a lot of work done in a little time because time is passing by. And they show her use it in all these other elements. She uses it at the supermarket. She passes. She gets her groceries. And then she leaves the supermarket, but she makes sure to leave the money in the register of the cashier just to show that she's not a thief. And then in the scene after that, they show a scene where she kind of gives in to her libido a little bit. She sees this really handsome guy outside. And then she kind of, I don't know if she feels him up or she gives him a little kiss. She kind of fulfills a little fantasy there. And she gets away with it. And it's this kind of idea that being able to stop time and start it again can give you a lot of benefits because, you know, it's an ability to to get through an event without actually spending any actual time. And I don't know, I thought this episode really did a bad job of showing that. I mean, they showed him stealing the money from the bank, which was an interesting idea, but they never showed him taking advantage of it. And in that episode, a little peace and quiet kind of showed you the power of that ability. Now, admittedly, in that episode, it was kind of foreshadowed throughout the episode. I don't know if I want to ruin it, but basically, she's forced into a situation where she stops time and can't really start it again without causing a major problem. So it's an interesting dilemma for the character now that she's stuck, that she stopped time, but now she really doesn't want to start it again. I mean, that's an episode that's actually, I think, still available on YouTube. And I just remember thinking it was a really good episode, a really good use of the concept. So that's talking about that episode. But this episode, the problem is McNulty's kind of dumb. He's kind of arrogant. We don't care about him. We think he's too stupid. When he uses the watch, he always goes back to the same spot he started in. When he restarts it, it's kind of like, you know, he should have stayed where he was. People would have asked, how did you get from here to there? That's what they did, I think, in The Girl with the Gold Watch and everything. That's how he quickly proved to Pam Darber that he was moving without her noticing any time passing. Hmm. So, you know, this episode, like everyone said, I think it's the character that really messes up the episode. The humor is flat. I just really like the concept. The concept just reminded me of all these future episodes. I looked up that Friday the 13th episode that Robert was talking about. And, you know, I mean, man, that's another interesting episode. What happened to those characters at the end? Are they...
Well, you should give it a watch. It is, the whole episode is on YouTube.
Yeah.
And you watch the whole episode.
I kind of remember it, and I kind of remember the ending. But then, what happened to those characters? Were they?
Well,
did they take them out like statues or something?
Spoiler warning: they free because remember Ryan is running. They're running the subway because remember they got to get back into the subway station before 1 o'clock, or you know for that hour to end. So the girl that had it and her boyfriend is running in the subway, and Ryan takes the stopwatch, and as he gets up on the deck of the subway or the subway station there, he makes it just in time. The other two don't make it time, and then they change from color to black and white, and they're frozen in time. So
now the concept there is that are they stuck in time,
yeah,
or are they frozen in time, or are they? Let me put it this way: are they alive? Like, for example, are they like McNulty now?
See, that's the thing. I don't know. They're just they just turn from color to black and white.
Yeah.
And they're frozen. Yeah.
And the idea is that their bodies are there, frozen in time. So
that's probably part of the curse. You have to be at that point with that watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's a great concept, poorly used in this Twilight Zone episode. But I don't know, just watching the episode and being reminded of the concept and what a good concept it is kind of elevates the episode for me a little bit. I would give it like 2 stars because, yeah, maybe even less than that, maybe 1.5, 2 stars. I'm not sure. But I'll be generous. I would have given the episode 2 stars, but because of the concept, I'd give it 2.5.
And that's why I give it 1. I give it for the concept. I didn't give it for the story. It was basically
But, you know, I'll give it 2.5 because I really dug the concept of being able to stop time. Using a stopwatch is actually a pretty interesting prop to use. So, you know, I give it 2.5. Bad story, but great concept.
Yeah. that's valid. Yeah. All right, cool.
Oh, Lynn, and we also have a Bewitched connection as well. Remember we always like pointing out people that were from the Twilight Zone, they end up in Bewitched.
Yeah.
Well, Roy Roberts, who plays the boss in this story, played Darren Stevens' father. He alternated with another actor during Bewitched. Remember, he played Frank Stevens on Bewitched.
Oh, was that? Oh, my God. I didn't even think to realize that. Oh, yeah.
I'm having another sick headache.
Oh, I'm picturing him. Now I'm picturing him. Yes, you're right. That was Frank Stevens. Oh, my God.
I thought I recognized him.
That one I missed.
Yeah.
That one got past me. Yeah. Yes, it did. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's cool.
He died in 1975. He was 69 of a heart attack. So.
One other thing, Robert, wasn't there one of the, you know, from the Hero series, wasn't there one of those that could stop time? Was it Hero himself?
Yeah, it was him. Because remember, we see future Hero. He appears to the one guy on the train thing. You kind of, Hero had kind of a futuristic Hero. He was kind of darker, more. Remember that?
Yeah.
Right. And he comes to Peter and he tells Peter about what's going to happen in the future or something like that. Yeah. Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Yes.
Well, I also want to bring up something. We lost a legend this past week. We lost Mickey Rooney at the age of, I believe it was 93 years old.
Good morning, good morning.
Wasn't it 96? Bobby, do you remember? Bobby.
Yeah. What?
Do you remember how old Mickey was?
93.
And, either way, I mean, you know, legendary character. I mean, wonderful actor. He had a very, very storied career and left a great legacy behind him, and he is actually in the next episode that we're going to be talking about 2 weeks from now, Last Night of a Jockey. And we're going to be talking about that on the 26th, April 26th, right before right before Easter Sunday, Robert?
Well, Easter is the 20th, isn't it? Because I think we're going to Palm.
Okay, yes.
Are we Palm 20th, Sunday this Sunday?
Yeah.
Okay. So Easter. Okay. So we missed Easter Sunday. Okay. So it's the Saturday after that. Okay. So the 26th, we'll be doing Last Night of a Jockey with the late great Mickey Rooney. Now, it's not the greatest episode as far as I'm concerned, but you know, he was a very
I'll see if I can bring Mr. Horse on. I'll give him a call.
Oh, yeah, bring Mr. Horse on.
If he's not busy.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he was a wonderful actor. And
he was, definitely.
And a wonderful person, you know. And like I said, this episode is not one of his best works, but that has nothing to do with it because he was, you know, everything else he did was really good. So...
Didn't he play a trainer in like the Black Stallion series and stuff like that? Yeah.
Well, he loved the track. That was something that he loved even in his personal life. He was a huge fan of the racetrack, and he used to do a lot of betting and stuff like that.
Well, it was in National Velvet, wasn't it?
Elizabeth Taylor.
And he had a tough time during the last few years of his life. His wife.
Well, I would, too, if I married eight times he was married?
Yeah. But the last one was the longest. The last one was the longest, and she really screwed him over badly. And so did his...
Just left his bones.
Yeah, they really messed with him. And he ended up going to live with his son and daughter-in-law, and they took care of him. But his ex-wife really tried to screw him over. So, yeah. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. And so everybody have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the weekend. It's gorgeous. Is everybody else having good weather?
Yeah, nice and sunny
here in New York.
Reasonable.
Yeah, it's gorgeous here. Okay, well then everybody have a great rest of the weekend. And I just want to read something to somebody right here on the chat room. Not to be discouraged, but there are many films. Yeah, I know. NC Visitor said there's many films where evil wins. Yes, you are absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
The point to remember is a lot of those weren't made when these episodes aired. That's the point.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. All right, everybody. We'll have a great rest of the weekend, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. Love all you guys. Have a wonderful, wonderful next day and a half of a weekend.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 And now, Mr. Serling.
Next on Twilight Zone, a gentleman of myriad talents and a story written especially for him. Mr. Mickey Rooney appears in The Last Night of a Jockey. He plays the role of a diminutive little man screaming for help in the bottom of a barrel, and the help he receives is unexpected and quite incredible. On the Twilight Zone, a cast of one, Mr. Mickey Rooney. I hope you'll be able to be with us.
If I could turn back time, if I could turn back time.